Today, I'm excited to introduce Abhinav Kapoor. Abhinav is the founder and CEO of Bikkie, which helps restaurants bring all their data into one place and then use it to get guests coming back more often. I had a look at the platform yesterday, and it's super impressive. It's like steroids for making smart decisions. My mission in today's episode is to tap into Abhinav's insight and experience to make data practical, fun, and actually useful for restaurant owners. Welcome to Guest Getter, the best place for restaurateurs to learn the art and science of getting more new guests, getting guests coming back more often, and getting guests spending more per visit so that you can be more profitable and do more of what you love. My name's Kyle Guilfoyle. Let's hit it. Abhinav, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me here.
Awesome. My pleasure. So I understand you grew up in the industry. You were watching your mother-in-law touch tables by day and then dig through the data at night. Could you share a bit more about how you found your way to where you're at today with Bikkie?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's my pleasure to be here. And thanks so much for having me. Yeah, it's like all things, like all good things, it started with a little bit of personal experience. And I still remember the day clearly where I walked in the restaurant and my mother-in-law, over 20 years, she built a 2-star New York Times rated restaurant, one of the first fine dining Indian restaurants in New York City. And I think one of the ways she did that was just by literally 12 hours a day, 6 days a week in the store, touching tables, knowing your guests' names, their faces, what they eat, what they drink. And one day I walked in and she's in the back of the restaurant instead of up front. I was like, what are you doing? And she's looking at a Grubhub delivery tablet and she's got a pen in one hand, notebook in the other. She's like, I recognize this person's name on the tablet. So I'm just writing down their phone number. I'm like, why are you doing that? And she's like, they're obviously loyal, but I have no connection with them. No idea who they are. If they had a good experience, if they'd come back. So I'm just going to call them. I was like, that's baller. Like no one's ever called me after a delivery order. And then later that weekend, we're at her house. And she's helping me with something on the computer. And she turns around the screen and she's on OpenTable. She's trying to export the data from everybody who made a reservation so I could email them. I want to know if they'd come back, if there's something we could do better, if they had a good experience. And I think those back-to-back moments are when the light bulb went off for me, where it's, look, she's really doing things and going above and beyond that operators typically don't do to understand her guests and to build relationships with her guests and extend her vision of hospitality just outside of those 12 hours a day that she's in the restaurant. And she has all this data in all these different channels. And she's really struggling to access it, bring it together and use it. And so that's what really started my obsession here of just, you look at other corners of hospitality and travel and retail and airlines and hotels know everything about us. But restaurants, which we frequent multiple times a week in many cases, don't really know anything about us and who is the person behind the transaction. We're really focused on pulling all this data together across point of sale, payments, online ordering, reservations, loyalty, all these crumbs of data. And I think more importantly, really helping operators find ways to use that data to grow their businesses, right? To make the right decisions on steroids, to really help them understand how do they bring people back for a second time? How do they make people come more often? How do they get them to buy the new thing that they just launched on the menu? I think all the more nuanced and important questions rather than just looking at the day and be like, sales went up today. I guess it was a good day, right? But you don't really know why sales were up in the first place. So yeah, just trying to go a level deeper through the customer level data.
Love that. Yeah, I believe one of the biggest challenges in the industry is that most restaurants don't connect guest information with guest behavior, which I'm sure is no secret to you. I'm curious, what's one thing you think most restaurants get wrong about data?
It's a really great question. Wow. What do most people get wrong about data? I would say number one, the biggest thing is it's too hard to use, right? Like I'm an operator. I need to make sure my employees are coming in. Like, I'll give you an example. My mother-in-law, she used to, it would be like a Saturday and we'd be at home and she'd be hanging out with her grandchildren and she'd be like, the chef just called out and he's sick. The delivery person just called out and he's sick. So I need to go in because I'm going to be cooking and you need to come with me. She's talking to me and you to do the deliveries because I'm shorthanded today. And in an environment like that, it's really easy when you are a 1, 2, 3 unit operator, it's really easy to work in the business instead of on the business. And so the idea there is I don't have time for data. Data is not going to help me. It's too hard to figure out. I got so many other hair on fire things I need to attend to. But there are still, even with those priorities and even with those constraints on an operator's time, there are still really simple ways to use data, not even from a Bikkie standpoint, but just in general, from the other systems that you're using, really simple ways. I think this is where restaurant technology has really thrived in the past few years of collectively as a group, tech providers have made it easier to just use data in very simple ways to help restaurants grow their businesses. And I think that's one really common misconception that we hear.
Yeah, I love that. What do you think the 1 to 3 most important data points are that restaurant owners should pay close attention to every single day?
Yeah, that's a great question. Number of new guests on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Your average check. How's that trending? Number of total sales per transaction. And I would probably say your retention rate. Those are the three biggest things, because I think those are really the key levers to drive growth in the business. You're either getting more people in the door, you're getting them to spend more money, and you're getting them to come back. And I don't think operators realize how actually easy it is to influence those three metrics, right? Like for new guests, you can launch a new menu item, right? Or you can repackage existing menu items into a combo, or you can choose to partner with a delivery provider that you haven't partnered with before. And all of those things are going to increase the number of new guests. For average check, you can add a new side dish. You can do a special with an appetizer for a week and package it with an entree as an add-on, and that'll increase your average check. And then retention, especially when you're a small operator, the best thing you can do for retention, it's not a data thing. It's something that operators already try to do really well. It's just really focusing on the quality and consistency of the customer experience. And I think the term, this is the way I think about the term hospitality. The term hospitality is really meant to drive that incremental visit. It is to give somebody a feeling, whether it's through the food, whether it's in the store, whether it's through the service, to bring them back a second time or a third time or a fourth time. And really, that's just the way to drive retention, is to just be really good at nailing the basics of the business, having good food, having good service, making sure it's at a reasonable price, giving someone, sending someone an email after they visit and say, how was your experience? We'd love your feedback. Or here's, we want you back for a second time through XYZ offer, whatever it may be. But I think those are the top three metrics: number of new guests, average check, and your retention rate.
I'd love your insight on something specific that I believe a lot of restaurants are really struggling with in this market's landscape, which is pricing. They're feeling the pressure from the third-party delivery apps, cost of goods skyrocketing. And so the answer is raise prices.
Right.
But at the same time, a lot of the market is shying away from the higher prices. And so they're just kind of, I think a lot of them feel super stuck. And I'd love your perspective on that and what advice you'd maybe give to restaurants around that.
Yeah, this is something I've spent a lot of my time over the last month, honestly, thinking about. Because keep in mind, this is the first time I've been building Bicky for 7 years now. This is the first time where I've gone through an environment like this, where people are using the term value or value equation, right? I think there's always been this, this business goes in cycles. And I think the last time we had an environment like this, probably 2008, 2009, is what I hear from my friends or my colleagues who have been around longer. And the thing that, this will feel like a novel insight to me, but maybe not to more seasoned operators that are watching this, but it feels like when price is the easiest lever to pull, and when you raise prices, the way to actually maintain engagement with your guest, frequency with your guest, or still be a compelling value to your guest is through menu engineering. And when I say menu engineering, I don't mean literally changing the inputs so that you have a potentially lower quality item that maybe is more profitable for you, but not as good an experience for the guest. What I mean specifically is being creative in repackaging things that are on your menu and offering them in different ways. So a great example that I've seen of this is something like McDonald's, honestly. And I know the initial sort of small operators will bucket this and be like, oh, that's McDonald's. That's what they do. But what do? They created a combo for $5. I guarantee you there are ways for operators to look at their standard menu price and be like, I'm offering a burrito for $15. How do I offer a burrito and a drink for $12, right? And that could just mean a smaller burrito. It could mean half a burrito and a drink. It could mean half a burrito and a side. But there are ways to be creative and to repackage things on your menu as it exists today to, one, offer a compelling value to the guest; two, get them in the door; three, have them feel like it's a compelling value so you drive that repeat transaction; and four, because you're not doing the full burrito, you're still making money on it. And I think that level of creativity is something that we've seen our customers start to do. We have a burger concept we work with. They're 20 units. Instead of doing a full, like they have three sizes of their burgers, small, medium, large. And a medium burger and a drink is $17. Now what they're doing is they're doing the small burger with fries at lunch for $11.99. And guess what? More people are gravitating towards that combo, and it's helping drive sales up. So I think those are like that type of repackaging of stuff that already exists on your menu is the most creative, and I also think the most compelling way to offer value to a guest today.
Yeah, 100%. One of my favorite examples that I've been mentioning lately is L Furniture Warehouse. And if you look at their menu, and I don't think this is new for them, but I think there are some good lessons, particularly in this market. And if you look at their prices, it looks like the prices are from the 2000s or maybe even the 90s, but it's magnetically attractive, right? So their pricing is so attractive that people will come in. I think a really important feeling to leave guests with, perennially important, but especially right now, is you want them leaving feeling like they received exceptional value for the money that they paid, because that's what's going to get them coming back. I went to a spot recently where my partner and I, we had two pastas and a non-alcoholic beer, and it was like $75 with tip. And I love the spot, but there's a lot of mental psychological friction that will prevent me from going back to that spot because of that feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think here's also the important thing. When we talk about menu engineering, it's not discounting. The same way price is the easiest lever to pull when sales start to slip, and I would say the worst one to pull is discounting, because you're going to get a spur of short-term traffic that is explicitly chasing the discount. Exactly. They're chasing the discount, and it gives you a nice shot in the arm and gives you a nice boost, but it doesn't drive repeat frequency. It doesn't drive repeat visits. And so it's a little bit harder to come up with the right combo on the menu to deliver to the guests and offer a compelling value, but it is more sustainable for the operator and for the restaurant in the long run.
And remember, you can test this out with offers and stuff like that. And I'm sure tools like Bicky. And but actually, I'd love to get super practical here, which is I'd love for us to see if we can chart a path for a one location restaurant and how they can practically use data to grow however they want. Maybe they just want to maximize the yield of that location, but also maybe they want to grow to several locations. And so I'd love for you to walk us through that journey, if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I would say at this, and none of these are groundbreaking tactics. I think people just don't leverage them enough. The easiest thing to do, and from a data standpoint, when you are a small operator, one unit, two units, you're probably going to be in the stores most of the time. It's your lifeblood. The business is your lifeblood. And so the easiest way to use data in that regard is pretty specifically just email marketing, honestly. Like, just getting better at targeting your message to customers based on their behavior. So making sure you have a welcome journey for a new guest, making sure that you have someone to catch a guest and bring them back if they're potentially lapsing. And so those are very simple. People don't think of it as data-driven techniques, but that's a very good data-driven technique to make sure that you are keeping sales consistently higher through proactive communication with your guests. I would say that's the highest leverage, lowest effort kind of thing that you can do.
I'd love to share two insights that may help some restaurant owners who aren't using this begin to use it. Email marketing is unequivocally the highest ROI marketing channel. If you look it up, the stats are quite clear that across all industries, for every dollar invested in email marketing, it yields something like 40 or $42 in revenue. And the other thing that I think is more powerful is that it's not your database or your list, but it's the relationship you have with your database or your list, which is that's from Dan Kennedy. I think engineering like a welcome journey, and I don't very simple, just building a
The
welcome
right
journey.
emails. That's it. Emails. Hi, thanks so much for visiting us. Number two, hey, here is the most popular thing on our menu. Not sure if you tried it yet. Three, here's my story as the founder of this concept. Done. That's
It.
it. Three emails, 3 to 4 days apart. Done. And it's like a really nice introduction to the
100%. And something else I've been adopting in my own business is because I recognize this is the most important thing. And the superpower that we're also trying to tap into is consistency, right? It's so easy for us to fall off track when it comes to consistency. And so something you could explore is the idea of sending a daily email. A lot of people be like, daily email. I don't want to annoy people, but there's no such thing as too much or too often. There's only too boring. If every single day your emails are like, buy my stuff, buy my stuff, buy my stuff, yeah, people are going to opt out. But if every single day you're giving a look under the hood, showing them how the cookie is made and telling stories, they don't have to be long emails either, but that's a simple way you can systematically ensure that you are building a healthy, strong relationship with that audience.
Yeah, and I think there's ways to like even put it back where it's like re-leveraging stuff that you already have or already do. So if you post on Instagram once a day or once every 2 days, take the same copy, take the same image, put it in an email. If you got a really good Google review, or it's a Friday and you got like a handful of really good Google reviews that week, hey, here's what people in the community are saying about us. Boom. Like, and there are ways to be really creative with content and assets and things that you are already getting to re-leverage it. And again, build that relationship.
Yeah. Here's your gee whiz repurposing strategy. Copy, paste.
Yeah.
And exactly. Okay. Awesome. So email marketing. I love that.
Yeah.
But what's next, would you say?
Yeah, I would say the next thing too is, and I think this becomes more important as you grow. And so you add the second, like going from one to two is really hard for people. So when you think about going from one to two, it's this idea of, are we having, it goes back to the same top line metrics that we talked about before, where it's like number of new guests, average check, as well as the retention rate. So something we see a lot of our brands do is they really like to look at how many new guests am I getting on a monthly basis or weekly basis? And then what's the 30-day retention rate of customers, of those new customers? And that's really helpful because it helps you at least spot trouble signs early, right? Because most people are not going to leave a review. Most people are just going to say, wasn't for me, like the $70 pasta or $75 pasta. Okay, not for me. You're not going to leave a bad review because maybe you like the experience, but you're not going to come back. People vote with their wallets and their feet more than they do with on online forums. And so looking at the retention rate is something that's very valuable because it can tell you if you have a traffic problem, like a new customer acquisition problem, or if you have an operational problem. And what most of our brands find is as they start to expand and as you get further and further away from the core idea of the business and unit number one, retention rate can start to vary, right? And it can start to fluctuate. And so that's when people really start to troubleshoot at location 3, 5, 7, 10, when they really start to dive in and they're like, what's going on with the ops here? Why are we not delivering on the value prop as much as we do in our core market? What needs to change from how we market in store to customers? How do we retrain the staff to and point them to the things that our most loyal customers love and drive ongoing frequency? And so I would say locations 2 to 5, really, the retention rate is the one thing that starts to matter because, again, the business is growing. It's going outside of your strict control.
And if you're not collecting guest information, like even just their phone number, asking every guest, oh, are you in our system? What's your phone number? What's your email? Whatever. If you're not collecting that systematically, it's really hard to track retention. Is that right?
No, that's right. That's what I mean. Selfishly, you could use Bicky and we can do that through the credit card data that's coming out of the POS system. But that's right. Yeah. If you're not collecting that breadcrumb of guest data, well, it could be a reservation on OpenTable where you get the email address. And I know like the reservation systems or even some of the point of sale systems do a good job, a better job now of at least giving you a snapshot of here's how many new guests you serve today. Here's how many repeat guests you serve today. And for what it's worth, what we see is typically most brands, it always tends to anchor towards new guests. Like new guests tend to be the biggest bucket, especially when you're in growth mode, right? You're going to new markets, you're serving new guests, and you want at least 20% minimum for the repeat guests. If you're at that 20% baseline, you're fine. That's a good baseline, but then you can start to work on improving that. And if you improve that and you expect the number of new guests to continue increasing, if you can get the repeat guests to come more frequently, you're just going to make more money just based on how the math works.
Love that. Okay. So we got email marketing. We have focusing on retention rate and troubleshooting things in that regard. Anything else?
The last thing I would say, and I think this is one of the most underlooked ones, and I would say this is probably a focus when you get north of 5 to 7 locations. So let's say email marketing is one just to drive deeper relationships with our core consumer, thinking about retention as you scale from 2 to 5 units because you're growing, the company's maturing, you're getting bigger, you're serving new people, you want to make sure they're coming back. We start to get into the more tactical, nuanced stuff around your menu item retention. And what that specifically means is how many people come back after they order a certain item on their first visit. The same way a consumer has a retention rate, every menu item has its own retention rate as well. And the menu, I will say, especially in growing concepts, the menu is where people have the deepest level, like the highest and strongest opinions about what's working and what's not, but not as much data. So like one of the things we say at Bicky is we replace spreadsheets and yelling. Because most of the time what people are doing is they're putting data in spreadsheets and they're looking at the numbers and they're yelling about the interpretation of it. And everybody has that menu item where they're like, oh yeah, that's my favorite menu item. Of course, everybody else orders that. Or it's the GM. They say, don't take that off the menu. People love that. And then when you look in the POS, it's like you sell 3 a day. And so menu item retention is one of those things where you can't argue with the fact that, yeah, sure, 20 people order that item per day, but only one of them comes back after they order it. Like that is a tremendously leaky bucket in that example. And so what I would say is like understanding the retention of every single menu item and how it contributes to bringing in new customers, as well as how it contributes to bringing them back, is that third unlock as you're growing from 5 units and beyond to really getting strategic about using data and having it as a sort of core level lever of your business.
That's such a cool aha that like men for, I think for, cause I step one that a lot of restaurant owners and operators don't think about is just that menus ought to be dynamic in general. Like they should be dynamic. Everything changes. So you could, yeah. I feel like you're going to say something. So
no, look, I'll give you an example, right? Like this didn't strike me until last week when I was, you know, I'm always curious what the big chains are doing and how they think about the business, because we as industry observers or operators can learn from them. And to give you an example, Taco Bell's phasing out breakfast, but they're letting their franchisees still offer the core menu starting at 9 a.m. And what that says to me is that breakfast doesn't work for everybody, but people love bean and cheese burritos at 9 a.m. still. And on top of that, they're starting to layer in, to your point about menus being dynamic, they're starting to layer in a totally new category of menu, which is their Cantina chicken menu. And I didn't realize this until I was reading about Taco Bell's results. They don't have a chicken menu. They've never had a chicken menu. Chicken was just something that you did to replace the beef in the chalupa in that single order. And now 1 in 5 orders are from the Cantina, the chicken specific menu. And so to your point around menu should be dynamic, the big players never slow down in terms of how they innovate on the menu, right? Of course, they have things that have been there for 10, 15, 20 years, but they never stop thinking about how do I repackage this in a more compelling way to offer more value? Or how do I develop net new things that still attract new people that we haven't served yet? Because here's the secret when it comes to the restaurant industry more broadly. 80% of guests never come back after their first visit on average. So for every 10 guests that come through the door and visit your brand, 8 of them are not coming back. And the 20% that do come back can be 50 to 90% of your revenue. And so what that means is that someone who's not your customer today will be your customer tomorrow. And so you should never stop thinking about how do I innovate on my own core product, which is the menu, to make myself more compelling and more attractive for the guests that I don't have today, but I could have tomorrow. That was one thing that I think that's been really interesting to see in the context of pricing and value. It's just the core menu innovation is the thing that should never stop. That flexibility of the menu and making the menu attractive is something that should never stop, because that is the product. At the end of the day, we can overlook bad service, bad experience if we love the food. And I think that innovating on that core product is something that will keep you consistently relevant and drive consistently higher sales over the long run.
Totally. That's awesome. Now, I'd love to take us to the finish line here. But before that, I'm just curious, where do you see the restaurant technology space going over the next, say, 2 years?
Great question. It's going to get even more divided between all-in-one platforms for smaller operators and best of breed or specialized providers for larger operators. And what I would say where the line is for me personally, when I think about all-in-one and what a smaller operator is below 20 locations. I think 20 locations is the line where people start to really think, maybe I should have a specialized loyalty provider. Maybe I should have a specialized marketing provider or a specialized data provider. I think if you're sub 20 units, there are amazing platforms out there like Toast, like Lightspeed, like Square, like Revel, who are trying to build, like Spot On, another good one, emerging one, that are trying to build a complete suite of tools that smaller operators can use to understand and execute on their business. And I think that if you are a bolt-on, it serves a sub 20 unit operator, I think that there's going to be consolidation, and either you'll get squeezed out by one of those larger players that's building all these tools, or you'll get acquired. We'll see that consolidation. And then I think north of 20, you're still going to have operators who are thinking about, okay, I need to specialize my business and get a specialized vendor in to help me with this part of my tech stack or this problem that I have in my business.
For sure. Yeah, totally agree. And okay, so before I have a rapid fire round of questions to ask you, they're totally random. But before we do that, what are you most excited about? What's next for you?
Great question. Wow. What am I most excited about? That's broad too. We could talk about tech. We could talk about the industry. I would say from a industry level standpoint, the thing that I am most excited about is the ongoing growth of digital in the restaurant space. And by that, when I say digital, I don't just mean online ordering or loyalty, because I think those are parts of digital. What I mean is the growth of digital transactions more broadly, whether it's through a point of sale service, pay at table ordering, digital payment, kiosk is a great example. Because if you think about it, like at the current rate of growth, there's still less than 25% of orders today in the restaurant business are digital, right? So it's 75% offline traditional payments, but digital transactions are growing at twice the rate as traditional transactions. But what that means is more than 50% of the business won't be digital until the year like 2048 or something like that. And so I think people forget how long lasting this change will be, how enduring this change will be, and how much it will change the idea of how restaurants interact with their guests and serve their guests. There's going to be a lot of innovation, a lot of excitement. And I think that's one of the things that I'm most excited about from an industry standpoint. And from a Bicky specific standpoint, I'll say quickly, the thing that I'm most excited about is, again, I get excited about menus. I get excited about data around menus. And so I hope one of the things that we can do is help people get better at making the menu dynamic and using that to spur growth in the business long-term.
Awesome. Okay, perfect. Abhinav, rapid fire. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. What's your favorite drink?
Oh man, my favorite drink is coffee. I'm drinking a coffee right now, but I like coffees light and sweet. So they're heavy on the cream, heavy on the sugar.
Like a little dessert.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, my team makes fun of me for it actually pretty regularly. But I need two of those before noon and then I'm good to go.
What book, tool, or resource has had the biggest impact on you?
Book, tool, or resource. I will tell you, I don't know if there's one book. I'll tell you the most recent book. I read a fiction book called Vertigo most recently. And it's written by a German author. He wrote this book 20 years ago. And the book is about memory. And it's written in a way our stream of consciousness runs, where it's, I saw this person and then it triggered this thought about this thing and that triggered this thought about that thing and that triggered that thought about that thing. And it made me realize that one of the most profound things as people that we can do on a daily basis is to turn off the devices, close our laptops, and just sit and think about our days for 10 to 15 minutes. Because what I found myself doing when I started practicing that was remembering things. I'm going to be 38 next week. I started remembering things from my childhood because it triggered this thought, triggered that thought, and triggered a memory that I had with my parents that I had forgotten about and I hadn't thought of in 20 plus years. And something that simple, to think about myself as a child with my parents, just made me insanely happy. Oh, I can't believe, yeah, I did do that with my mom on that day. And here's how I felt about it. And then I can share that with my kids. And so it's, again, just 10 minutes of just sitting, closing everything, thinking. I would say that most recently, that book, because that's how the book is written, has had the most profound impact on me recently.
I love that. Yeah. I also find you, when you do things like that, like I've been developing this practice of, I call it extreme walking, where I try to walk 15,000 steps a day, just to, not for the exercise as much as so that I can't be around a device during that time. And I can only do one thing, which is walk and, I don't know, maybe listen, but you literally feel physiologically, like your brain, just like your head, just like a weight, like it decompresses somehow, I find. And yeah.
And honestly, it's made me more engaged as someone who runs a business as well, because it's not just about the personal. Something will come up and then I'll say, oh my God, that's an idea I need to run by my co-founder, because that is a different approach to how we talk to restaurants or how we think about the product. Just the idea to sit and think, and it only takes 15 minutes of your day. It's small, it's simple. But I'm telling you, in the last 3 weeks that I've been doing it, it's already made a profound difference in how I think about me personally, my relationship with my wife, my relationship with my kids, and my relationship to my business. And those are the things that I spend the most time on anyway. So
100%. Yeah, I love that. So my best breakthroughs, aha, problem solving comes just on a walk or just sitting there doing nothing. That's awesome. Okay. All-time favorite restaurant experience?
Wow. Okay. My wife and I, we had been married for 3 years. This is the first one that comes to mind. So I don't know if it's all-time favorite, but it's the first one that comes to mind. My favorite weather is the rain. I've always loved the rain. I love when it pours rain. I love to sit. I love to think. I love to ruminate. I love to open the window. I love to hear the sound. Both my kids were born on rainy days as well. So I'll take that as if you're superstitious like me, take that as a sign. We were in Lake Como in Italy, and I just got into a car accident with our smart car that we were driving through the Italian countryside. And we finally got to where we need to be, the hotel where we were staying on the top of the mountain overlooking Lake Como. And we were sitting outside. It was us and only one other couple at the restaurant. And right when we got to our table, it started pouring rain. And so it's still 75 degrees out. So it's nice, it's cool, but it's pouring rain. And it was a candlelit dinner and we were having a really nice bottle of wine together. And it was the first time that we were actually in Italy, because we were there for a wedding and we were driving around and everything was crazy. But it was the first time, and it was one of the last days of the trip, where we got to just be present with each other. And I think that was my favorite. I don't even remember what I ate that night, but that experience will live with me forever. And I think that's probably one of my top five, I would say, restaurant experiences.
That sounds awesome. This rapid fire is not so rapid.
I'm very lengthy and wordy.
I love it. I got two more here. Okay. If
I'll
you
try
had
to keep it
one,
quick.
if you, this one I stole from Tim Ferriss, if you had one message on a billboard, what would it be?
Focus on now.
That was
I think,
rapid. Love it.
Yeah. I watched Inside Out 2 last night. And one of the emotions in, have you seen Inside Out?
Yep. Oh yeah.
Okay. So in the second one of the main emotions is anxiety,
Anxiety.
right? Anxiety can take control of you and it can get your mind working on all the eventual outcomes that may never happen. But the only thing you can control, and they say this at the end, the only thing you can control is what you can do in the moment. And so focus on now.
Love it. Abhinav, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people go to connect with you and learn more about what you're up to and Bikki?
Yeah, Bikki.com, Abhinav, Abhinav at Bikki.com if you want to reach out to me directly.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Guest Getter Podcast, where we help you turn visitors into regulars and regulars into raving fans. If today's episode sparked any questions or ideas about growing your restaurant, why not drop us a line? Text us at 778-400-4915 and let's start a conversation about growing your restaurant and taking it to the next level. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and keep playing offense. Until next time, cheers.